Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Felicity. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Going Places by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, a 1965 release on A&M Records, catalog number LP112, and the stereo version is SP4112.
So this album comes from my previously discussed collection of 1960s A&M recordings, and I believe this is a record that both Felicity and I had independently purchased before we got married.
Yeah, this, I think, is probably the first Herb Alpert album that I bought.
Yeah, and so I think I have the inclination to sort of buy these records in mono. So my copy is probably the mono copy, and I think Felicity bought the stereo copy that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about this album, Felicity?
Sure. So on the cover, Herb Alpert is a passenger on this little glider plane. What are those guys called that have like the propeller in the front?
Like a bi-wing or something?
Yeah. And there's a lady in kind of like a can-can outfit lounging, I guess, on the lower wing, serving him a cocktail. And he's got a scarf blustering behind him and a pilot in the front. And then in this little placard up in the sky, it says Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, Going Places with exclamation points, and sampling of the tracks underneath. And it's like in that placard, it's green and white and sort of this vibrant orange. It's really kind of heinous. Like the whole cover is like very, very vibrant colors. And I guess that green, white, orange is like the Mexican flag, right?
Yeah, it's
the same pattern.
Yeah, it's supposed to be reminiscent of that.
I mean, it doesn't have the graphic in the center, and it's not like totally symmetrical, but it is reminiscent of the Mexican flag, I guess. And then on the back, there is, again, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass Going Places, and it has a picture of Herb Alpert on the left and the Tijuana Brass on the right. And then it has just sort of this, one of those promotional descriptions on the back. The TJB's previous albums and singles have sold like hot tortillas, and tortillas themselves have been selling faster than ever north of the border. And then it has on the bottom portion a track listing and some credits.
All right. Well, do we want to just take a listen to our first clip?
Yeah, let's check it out. I picked the first track, Tijuana Taxi.
All right, let's take a listen. What do you think?
What I really love about Herb Alpert is his, like, cheerfulness. Like, the Tijuana Taxi, I think, is among the most upbeat and most brassy of Tijuana Brass. It's just so fun. It's just so fun. And it's got, like, that big, like, extra loud, extra bassy, like, bomp, bomp, like, with the horn sound in there. So, it's just fun. That is truly the pure, simple delight of Tijuana Taxi. Is just, that's what I love.
Yeah, so we've talked in previous episodes about, I guess, what I could say is my love-hate relationship with brass. And I think that this is exactly sort of the case, where it's sort of this brash brassiness that, I don't know, it's sort of like, at the same time sort of off-putting and also sort of endearing. And yeah, I think that somehow in the Herb Alpert packaging, it sort of works. And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, this is, I guess, one of the more popular Herb Alpert songs. It was written by Irvin Bud Coleman, who also was a member of the Baja Marimba Band, which is perhaps my preferred sort of faux Mexican A&M group, where he played the guitar and mandolin. And yeah, unfortunately, he died early, sort of in 1967, from complications, I guess, following a routine surgery. And he had written a few songs, I think, for Herb Alpert, including this one. And Herb Alpert, I guess, honored him on his, I guess, ninth record, called Herb Alpert's Ninth, with a song called Bud that I guess was sort of co-written by his wife.
And I think Bud Coleman was part of the very early involvement of A&M Records. Before A&M was A&M, it was Carnival Records, and I guess...
Turns out there's another record company called Carnival Records, I guess.
Right. And so they renamed it to A&M. And before the Lonely Bull album came out on A&M, they put out a couple singles, and one of them was a Bud Coleman song.
All right. Well, since you've already started telling us about Herb Alpert and A&M, you want to tell us a little bit more?
Sure. So Herb Alpert was born in L.A. in 1935. And he was classically trained. He started playing trumpet when he was 8. And he played in a military band when he joined, I think, the Army. Played in marching band. And he was really interested in jazz. And so he basically just kind of emulated all of the jazz artists that he was interested in. He would just listen to a ton of jazz music. And so he emulated Miles Davis and Louis Armstrong, other jazz artists, until he kind of like landed on his thing. So there's a couple things that led to the Tijuana Brass sound, one of which was he heard a recording of another jazz artist that had used some tapes and recorded his playing on multiple tracks and layering you know, his jazz improv on multiple tracks. And so Herb Alpert, he had like a pretty simple tape deck, and he started experimenting with that idea. And then he also took a trip to Tijuana, and while he was there, he heard a mariachi band at a bullfight. And I guess he just really fell in love with it. He fell in love with how the mariachi band interacted with his different parts of the bullfight. And he wanted to capture the essence of that experience in a song. And that song was The Lonely Bull. And so the original recording of that was him overdubbing his own trumpet and also adding in some crowd sounds for that song. And then later he hired the Wrecking Crew, which is, of course, a pretty famous group of session recording artists to record the remainder of that album.
Yeah, it was sort of like a loose conglomeration of session musicians, I guess.
Right, and so, you know, I guess later down the road, there was a set group of artists that made up the Tijuana Brass, but for that first recording, the first couple songs that he made was just sort of a bunch of pretty awesome session musicians. And then in 1964, the album Whipped Cream and Other Delights came out. That one is among the most famous ones that you will find in your thrift store record bin, because it's got this green cover and this lady covered it in nothing but whipped cream, which is actually shaving cream. And that album is so famous for its cover that it's been like parodied for other artists. Other albums have sort of borrowed that idea. And in 1966, over 13 million Herb Alpert recordings were sold, and that meant that he was outselling the Beatles. So that is just like so crazy to me. Like, I feel like maybe Herb Alpert, even though he's still alive and he's still working today, like, I feel like he's kind of been forgotten. And that same year, in 1966, the Guinness Book of World Records recognized that Alpert had set a new record by placing 5 albums simultaneously in the top 20 on the Billboard pop album chart. And that has never been repeated. That's just like, that's amazing to me. And what else is amazing to me is that, like, you know, the 60s was like such a rich time of music. And part of it, I think, was like, it was pretty edgy. Like the Beatles were doing some pretty weird stuff. The Rolling Stones were getting started. And so I think there's like a lot of, you know, rock and roll was really like, that's a really rich time for rock and roll. Things were starting to get a little edgier. And I think Herb Alpert is like the opposite of edgy. It's like very easy listening. It's like chill. I mean, it's absolutely cool, but you know, it's, I don't know. Like, how can that be cool? And also the Beatles are cool.
Yeah. I mean, we talked a little bit about this in the Sergio Mendes episode that I guess Sergio Mendes, he had sort of become like a huge force in popular music at the time, which, you know, I mean, like everything he touched was gold, I guess, which is sort of hard to believe now because I think, you know, most people wouldn't have even heard of him. And Herb Alpert is the same way where it's like, I think, you know, people might have some awareness of some, you know, compositions that were on Herb Alpert albums, but I don't know that they would necessarily know them as being Herb Alpert songs.
Yeah. And I think maybe, you know, people of our parents' generation probably remember Herb Alpert and remember him being like the cool, awesome trumpet guy that he is. But I think people of our generation and younger probably don't know who Herb Alpert is. And even if they heard a Herb Alpert song, I don't know that they would necessarily recognize it. Aside from, so in 1979, Rise was number one on the Billboard charts and it won a Grammy. And that song is sampled heavily in the song Hypnotized by Notorious B.I.G. So, like, that song is really famous. I think maybe, like, even though I think, like, the highlight of my Herb Alpert listening is from the 60s, I think many people would recognize Rise as his more famous song.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know, I mean, I guess sort of speaking of artists that were very popular at the time and then sort of not appreciated by younger generations, I guess maybe we'll have to have a Lawrence Welk album.
I don't even know that Lawrence Welk was appreciated by older generation.
I don't know. I think so. Anyway, that's sort of off topic.
Yeah. So, like I said, Herb Alpert, he's still alive. He's still creating music. And in the more recent years, he has expanded his artistic interests into painting. And so he is pretty well known, in addition to his music, as an abstract expressionist painter and also as a sculptor. So he, if you catch any more recent interviews with him, that's like a practice of his, like every day. In addition to playing music, he also goes into the studio in the morning and paints every day. He also has founded with his wife Lonnie Hall, who we talked about on our previous Sergio Mendes episode. Lonnie Hall was a vocalist in Sergio Mendes's group, and so with his wife, they founded the Herb Alpert Foundation, and among other things, they contribute to a lot of causes in terms of setting up music programs in schools. So both in, you know, for schools for younger kids as well as in college. And he seems like a really generous person. He's given away millions and millions of dollars to support music in schools. And just a side note, I found this so funny from the Wikipedia article. The phenomenal popularity of the Tijuana Brass in the 1960s spawned countless imitation groups on cheaply produced drugstore records, such as the Mexicali Brass, Mariachi Brass, Guadalajara Brass, Trumpets Olay, Bullfight Brass, and my favorite one, Pert Lappert and his Iguana Brass.
Yeah, and I think we have some of, you know, some of these things like the Mariachi Brass, yeah, or the Mexicali Brass.
Yeah, we do.
And I don't know, I mean, yeah, it's like when we were talking about the Twist album, how it's like other people found that formula and they just sort of copied it very cheaply And, you know, yeah, just sort of had like sound-alike albums that sort of tried to capitalize on the popularity of Herb Alpert.
What I think is a little bit bizarre about this, like, even though they're called the Tijuana Brass, and even though, like, on the back it has, like, this thing about tortillas, and it has, like, the sort of Mexican flag on the front, like, to me, like, the only connection is, like, this very sort of ephemeral moment of Herb Alpert going to Tijuana and seeing this bullfight. Like, I would never mistake any of this stuff as, like, actual Latin music. Like, it's just a lot of brass.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, though, talking to my mother about this. I mean, I remember her saying that, you know, when she was growing up, it's like, this is what she thought was, like, super Mexican, you know, and it wasn't until later that she really realized that, wait a minute, you know, like, nobody involved in this has really any connection to, you know, Mexico, that nobody has any Mexican heritage or anything.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm kind of curious about that too, because, like, absolutely, Herb Alpert must have had some influence in how the band was perceived. But I don't know that he necessarily would think that, like, oh, yeah, like, this is like a Latin, we're like a Latin band. But, you know, being the co-founder of A&M, he also would have worked with the production of the Baja Marimba band, which absolutely, that is like fake Mexican music.
Yeah, I mean,
like, they make a big deal of being like fake Mexicans.
Yeah, I mean, he worked with Julius Wechter, who founded the Baja Marimba band. I guess, you know, Julius Wechter founded the Baja Marimba band sort of at Herb Alpert's urging. So, yeah, I mean, there was definitely, I guess, in the early 60s era of A&M, a theme of having sort of you know, Mexican-themed, you know, American groups or whatever.
That seems weird and kind of racist.
Yeah, I mean, not to excuse it or, you know, whatever, but I just think, I guess we can't hold him to the standards of today, and I'm sure that he thought he was honoring, you know, the Mexican musicians that he, you know, fell in love with in Tijuana when he was doing this, but sort of, you know, mid-century example of cultural appropriation that I guess would be definitely frowned upon today.
Yeah. And, you know, like, you know, doing research for this episode, I went back and watched some interviews with Herb Alpert and read some things that he's written about music. And he seems like just such a good-natured person. And I think, you know, one of the things that I heard him say was that, like, he doesn't think of music in terms of genres. There's, like, only good music, and there's only music that he connects with. And so one of the things about A&M Records is that he was not just the producer and manager of that label, but he's also an artist himself. And so it was really important to him as a producer to only hire on artists that he thought were inspiring or interesting, or he made some kind of connection with. And so, yeah, I don't think there's anything malicious about his fake Mexican music, but still,
it's marginalizing of actual Mexican musicians. Yeah. Do we want to listen to our second clip?
Yeah, what did you pick?
So I picked I think it is the third song on side A, and it is Spanish Flea. So let's take a listen. We'll be right back. Okay, let's see. What do you think of this song?
Well, again, this is a super upbeat Herb Alpert selection, and so I'm instantly a fan.
Yeah, I think that this is probably one of the songs that has sort of oozed its way into people's pop culture awareness. And I think it has done that sort of a large part through The Simpsons, where it has been featured, you know, several times in different episodes over the years. And also because it was used as a theme on The Dating Game. And I think, I don't know, I mean, I haven't seen reruns of that recently, but even, you know, as of the early 2000s, it was still sort of played reruns on TV. And so I think, yeah, it's sort of one of those songs that just, I think people would recognize even if they're not consciously aware of, you know, its name or where it came from or whatever. And this is a song that's actually composed by Julius Wechter, who we just talked about a little bit ago. And Julius Wechter is a very interesting career because he started off in the 1950s playing with Martin Denny, playing vibraphones, and then went on to form the Baja Marimba Band, as we mentioned. And the Baja Marimba Band also played oftentimes as the opening act of the Tijuana Brass shows. And then also around this time, Julius Wechter also played with the Beach Boys on Pet Sounds, playing vibraphones. And I think this song is interesting because, I don't know, I guess I sort of think of it as sort of quintessential Herb Alpert. And it also has a tie-in to the first Sergio Mendes album on A&M was called Herb Alpert Presents Sergio Mendes in the Brazil 66. And he sort of played a version of the song that was incorporated into the song One Note Samba, or Samba de Uma Nota So, by Antonio Carlos Jobim. And that originally had lyrics, I guess, written by Newton Mendonça, who I guess also, like Bud Coleman from the first selection, also sort of died early in 1960 following a heart attack. So, you know, I think I sort of probably came across this song first through Sergio Mendes and the Herb Alpert Presents album. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a sort of a classic Herb Alpert song, and I guess a classic Julius Wechter composition.
Yeah, I think so too. And when I hear the Spanish Flea, I often hear it if it's a re-recording of it, or if it's a re-recording of it, another artist covers it. I often hear it as part of One Note Samba. Do you know if that was Herb Alpert that did that arrangement, or if it was Sergio Mendes, or both of them together?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they specifically picked that, but I think it's kind of an interesting amalgam of, a bossa nova sort of classic and this Julius Wechter composition that is sort of supposed to be, I guess, in the Latin style.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, but I think it was pretty effective. And I think the lyrics that they choose for Brazil 66 compositions, I think, are, I don't know, I mean, I guess we already talked about the Sergio Mendes formula, but I think are quite effective in blending songs that were originally Portuguese language lyrics with sort of tailoring them for an American audience. So what do you think about this album, Felicy?
This is a favorite. It is probably my favorite Herb Alpert album, but it's hard to say. There are a lot of good ones. And unfortunately, I mean, we have two copies of this, as we mentioned earlier. Unfortunately, both of them, I think, came from like the bargain bins, and they show their wear. They're a little bit, both of them are kind of noisy. There's scratches and schmutz on there. Even with a rigorous cleaning, our copies don't sound great. The good news is that because Herb Alpert is still a living legend, he was able to finance the re-release of his catalog on a new edition. So if you want a fresh and clean copy of Going Places or any Herb Alpert album, you can get that now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the real reason I picked up these albums is because they are sort of a thrift store staple. It's like you go to, thrift stores and record collecting has become sort of trendy now. And so thrift stores want to charge you actual, like, real prices for records. But at the time when we started collecting records, you know, you could get records for like a quarter or whatever. And Herb Alpert would always be one of the ones that you'd see every time. It's like Herb Alpert and Harry Conniff would be like the, you know, the two I guess I would see more than anything. And so
Andy like, Williams.
Yeah, Andy Williams too.
But 101 Strings. yeah, I think like when you see an artist over and over and over again in the dollar bin, it's like, all right, fine. Like I'll try this one.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, and I don't know, it's like something about, I guess, you know, you get into sort of late 60s or early 70s A&M too, but there'd be a lot of other things like Captain and Tennille or whatever, these other A&M artists. And it's just like, well, what is it about A&M that I'm always seeing these records sing around? And so it sort of, I don't know, not even just necessarily for their musical content, but just sort of like as a, I don't know, pop culture artifact or whatever, just sort of got me interested in collecting them. And, you know, I mean, like every time I'd go to the thrift store, it'd be like a different Herb Alpert album. And I'd be like, how many albums does this guy have? So, but I think it's definitely worth picking up and something that you could, you know, I don't know, put on and play in a sort of hipstery, ironic sort of way, but also just sort of casually to listen to. I don't know.
I think it's a great album to listen to if you need some cheering up. I mean, it's like, it's just something about Herb Alpert's music that's just like so positive sounding, like, and you can see that how that came out of him, because if you watch any interviews with him, he just seems like so laid back and cool. And I think really, like, I don't know, there's just like just so much goodness that comes out of this album. It's highly enjoyable.
Yeah. And so I think there were like CD re-releases of all these albums, I think in the early, you know, around the 2000 or something. And like Felicity said, that there's LP re-releases, and I'm sure they're still ubiquitous at thrift stores, though probably like $4.99 or something now. And it's easily available on streaming services, so it should be very easy to find. And so I recommend listening to, you know, a variety of Herb Alpert albums and continue on into his stuff into the 70s. It does veer off into the sort of like soft jazz genre in some places, but I don't know. I mean, I find all of his later stuff, I think, pretty pleasant. There's a Herb Alpert's, I guess, like definitive hits or greatest hits or something album that I would recommend, that sort of career spanning. So that's a good place to start, I think. So if you'd like to learn more, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/25. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Living in Hi-Fi. For a longer correspondence, email us at feedback@livinginhifi.com. And next week, we have another sort of special guest album. This one is, I guess, by special request of my mother. So we'll be excited to listen to that. And so thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.